Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I look at Chris Saliza and I look at Michael Kornheiser and I look at Tom Cotton, and they are constantly going to their machines with more than one finger. I'm an ape.
Well, yours is
I
in
have
your car.
One
it's a
finger.
Car phone.
I just have one finger, and I watch them, and they can carry on like Saliza can. I'm sure that Cotton and Saliza have texted each other while they're sitting in here because it's just so
can
much.
Can you believe this guy?
So
just tolerate him and smile.
So.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then. From an as yet undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, we are on the air plausibly live with David Aldridge and Gary Braun. Gary back from many, many weeks of doing what he does. Michael Kornheiser, Nigel will run the board. Jason Lockenfora will join us later in the show. And I, later in the show, will talk about yesterday's show. And, you know, you can start tweeting now if you want. You don't even have to listen to it because that's what happened yesterday. I will start today. There's a lot of things I could start with, but this is local news of a terrifying nature. And this is something that if it happened where you lived, maybe you would think that it was terrifying as well. There is a bobcat on the loose from the National Zoo. The headline in the paper.
And not the Goldthwaite cat. like an actual four-legged.
This happened yesterday in the late afternoon to early evening. Mm-hmm. And here is the headline in the morning paper. Hunt continues for bobcat that fled National Zoo. The bobcat is still out there. I'm going to read from this piece. A 25-pound bobcat escaped from the National Zoo on Monday and may have fled into Rock Creek Park, where it could be difficult to recapture, officials said. The female cat, which can be a threat to small dogs and cats, is not a danger to the public. Why? Why is it not a danger
to
the public?
That?
Why not? But should not be approached, the zoo said. Well, if it should not...
Not a danger yet.
Okay. Quote, if someone attempts to capture her, then she could defend herself, said Brandy Smith, the zoo's associate director for animal care sciences. Quote, so do not try to capture this cat. You could get hurt. Well, they just said...
I don't understand.
It's not a danger.
It's what we call conflicting messages.
But you could, alternate facts. But you could get hurt. You'd probably more likely just cause her to run away. Then the bobcat is named Ollie, and she was last seen in her enclosure at 7:30 a.m. I guess she was going for coffee at that point yesterday.
Sure.
When keepers returned to deliver breakfast, you get breakfast in bed.
More of a brunch because I think it was like
10:40. Yeah. She was gone.
It's obviously well planned.
Careful examination
of
the bobcat's outdoor enclosure.
She put a pin-up poster over the hole in the wall.
Exactly. That's right. A red panda.
A small hole in the overhead mesh through which the animal may have escaped. The zoo has three bobcats, two males and Ollie. She was probably, the story says, attracted to the mesh by a bird or small animal on it. The staff is trying to lure Ollie back, and the zoo said she may return to her familiar grounds for food and shelter. David, there's zero chance of luring that
freedom.
Cat.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Well, the animal.
It's Andy Dufresne in the rain.
Right. She's in Say What today, or working on a boat right
their,
now.
Their contention is that the animal knows there's food, there's warmth, there's shelter, but the animal is also a capable hunter. The quote I liked was the zoo's curator, Craig Sappho, who said, quote, it would be extremely easy on us if she were a cat who would come when called, but that's not who this individual is.
Yeah. Let me go a little bit deeper in the story, remembering that early in the story, this said not a danger to the public.
Right. Just as long as you're not close.
Smith, who we talked about before, Brandy Smith, said pet owners in the area may not want to leave small dogs or cats outside unattended.
Yeah.
The zoo has put tasty food items in Ollie's enclosure as well as traps around it. Also set up special cameras that may spot her. Then it goes. Bobcats.
Like funnel cakes?
Bobcats are brownish gray and have huge whiskers. They eat rabbits, squirrels, and mice. And you're okay with that until the next clause in the sentence, as well as small deer, goats, and chickens. Deer are big.
Yeah.
Even small deer are big.
We eat chickens.
Yeah.
That's right.
And of the bobcats, they can run fast, climb well, and leap into the air to nab low-flying birds.
Ooh.
Or, it seems to me, other things.
Low-flying birds is the key clause there.
What do we make of this? This is out there. This is a bobcat.
Yeah.
It's not the Cincinnati or Binghamton Bearcat. It's a made-up thing. No. This is
an actual thing. I own an not enormous cat. I own a house cat, which is huge. At 12 pounds is pretty big
Lunch.
For a house cat.
Right.
This is twice that size. Yeah. So this is more, this is like a small, a small to medium-sized dog at 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And, got those, what do they call them?
Claws.
Thank you, David. Yeah. And those, what are those things in the mouth?
Fangs.
Yeah, the fangs.
By the way, Ollie the Bobcat on Twitter, and 9 hours ago, tweeted out, "I'm so drunk, y'all." 8 hours ago, you'll love this, "Scored some pupusas from a food truck, so I won't be too hungover tomorrow. Now to get some sleep at an undisclosed secret location."
There you go.
Good night.
Has anyone talked to Reginald? Because he usually knows what's going on.
Well, we'll talk to him on Thursday, but no, we've not.
This made the Today Show.
Yeah, as it should.
This made the Today Show. This is a wild, carnivorous beast that is roaming around, and their response, the zoo's response, is to put cookies on a tray in its cage. Not coming back.
Yeah, kidding.
Do you remember Rusty in 2013?
Was that
Rusty,
the red panda?
The red panda that they found wandering drunken aimlessly through the streets of Adams Morgan after just like a few hours. Yeah. This thing's in the wind, man. Yeah. This is like El Chapo.
This is like the snake escaping from the Bronx Zoo. It's a snake!
This is, and when they say, don't put your pets out, why wouldn't it eat a baby?
Mm-hmm.
Dingo ate my baby.
But people don't anymore really just put their babies out, especially in this
at
weather.
At night?
Summertime, maybe. No.
Did the local elementary school go too far in canceling outdoor recess?
Well, is that what happened?
Lafayette canceled outdoor recess.
That's where he went to school.
Yeah,
that's
Lafayette, smart move.
Right outside of Rock Creek Park.
I think that's a smart move because, you know, Bobcat's going to bob.
That's,
yes.
Right.
I mean, I know that everyone is laughing, but still, this is a bobcat. And when you, let's just say it stays out in the wild and eats a bunch of things in the wild for, say, 3 weeks. Just say 3 weeks. By that point, it'll weigh 35 to 45 pounds. It'll be a killer.
Yeah.
It'll be a killer.
Rip your lungs out,
and when they say at the end of the piece, small deer, how small? Mm. I mean, deer, even when deer are born, because I saw this happen in the little house in the yard, they're pretty big to begin with.
Yeah.
And in 3 days, they're walking around, and if a bobcat eats that.
Didn't say newborn deer.
Yeah,
said small deer.
If a bobcat eats that and eats a goat.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the last? What, are they breeding miniature goats? Goats are fairly substantial animals.
Exactly, size
right?
36 waist.
Have you checked the backyard of the little house yet?
No, I haven't. That's what Tracy said last night, that she feels that it will go there.
This is like a deer situation.
So, Tony, you have experience having buried, I believe, 3 dogs. What would be an appropriate punishment for Ollie should she return to the National Zoo?
Solitary, right?
I think a $2 million fine and a loss of 2 draft picks. Or miss the first 4 games,
right?
Like Brady,
right?
Like that's what wouldn't Goodell do that? Miss the first, four.
And then like Goodell, you just don't ever go to her exhibit anymore.
That's right.
So I mean,
not on her home turf.
I think that would be it. So I did.
She's cute.
I wanted to get David involved in it. Boogie Cousins, who there are two people in the National Basketball Association who we are utterly convinced are completely uncoachable at all times. One, of course, is Rajon Rondo, who has gone to 6 teams, and within hours of getting to the new team, a coach who usually has won an NBA championship. I can't play this guy. I can't deal with this guy. And the other one is Boogie Cousins. And Boogie Cousins last night had 46-17, and his team lost. And I remember earlier in the year, I think Anthony Davis had like 50-25 or something.
Yeah, I think opening night had 50.
And his team lost.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not used to that.
No.
How does that happen?
The rest of your team not very good is what happens, you know. So they're just, you know, they're kind of meandering, and they lost Rudy Gay for the season. So, you know, they weren't a really good defensive team to begin with, and now they're not very good at all, and they lost. And Philly's played better, but, you know. They still should have beat Philly. I mean, that was a bad loss for them.
Sacramento hasn't been in the playoffs in like 10,000 years.
It's been a while.
They're like the Buffalo of basketball at this point. And I find myself sort of rooting for him a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But Cousins is, and yet every coach would want him, right?
Absolutely.
Even though Yes, whatever coach has
like
him.
Your friend Larry Brown, every coach thinks, right. I'll get him straightened out until he gets there. Yeah,
right.
I'll get him straightened out.
He's gone through four guys already at Sacramento, and none of them leaves with a good word to say about him.
Not really. Well, actually, Mike Malone was the one guy that got along with him, and actually they stupidly fired him 10 games into the season. That tells you all you need to know about Sacramento.
They're a disaster. Yeah. That's ownership, and it's, they're a disaster. Yeah. Cleveland loses again to a bad team. And so, now, Dallas is a really bad team, though you will say to me, well, Dallas has beat San Antonio and beat Cleveland, but they're a really bad team. Everybody, and by everybody I mean Wilbon, wants to say that there's absolutely nothing wrong with Cleveland, and don't worry about them, and they're in this sort of lull before the All-Star game. And I'm okay with that, except for this. Golden State doesn't appear to be in that same lull.
No.
Golden State appears to be actually better than last year.
They're at DEFCON 1.
Right. Right. So what are your thoughts on Cleveland?
Well, I mean, this is more than just a blip and, the doldrums of January, and we're bored because we're so good. This has been going on for like 2 weeks now. You know, we're there losing games, and not only is Dallas not a good team, Dallas had played the night before. Now, they beat San Antonio in San Antonio, so that's a great win for Dallas.
But they're not going
to
win.
All the more reason to expect them not to show up.
Exactly, in a back-to-back situation. And they come and they beat Cleveland pretty handily. Now, Love didn't play, but still, you know, that's not a good loss. So I'm starting to think of Cleveland now kind of like I thought of Houston after they won their first title, and they were not playing great, and they wound up trading for Clyde Drexler. You know, because they needed a little push. They need a little something to get them kind of over the hump, and maybe.
Well, is anyone in Cleveland suggesting they need help? That's a joke.
Other than LeBron?
That's a joke.
What do you make of his back and forth with the owner?
Well, you know, it's the price of going and getting LeBron. You're going to get all of it. You're going to get the entourage. You're going to get the special treatment. You're going to get all those things. You're going to get him, you know, popping off about personnel. That's the deal. Now, he's the best player in the world, so you live with it, but that's the deal. And it has some effect. I don't think it has a great effect, but it has some effect, sure. I mean, it's not ideal for your player, your best player, to say, we need help because the rest of these guys stink.
Considering you signed all of these guys and got them additional money because they're represented by your agent.
Right.
Do you believe this story that Gilbert, while winning the championship, lost $40 million?
I mean, on paper, sure. I believe he may have lost that much money on the Cavaliers. He also happens to own half of Detroit.
Well, no, but I'm just talking about
and like 83 casinos, you know. So I don't think we need to hold a telethon for Dan Gilbert, okay?
But that's an amazing, if that's true.
Yeah, well, he might have lost money on that entity that he owns called the Cleveland Cavaliers, but it's not the only thing he owns.
I'll go back to the point I was trying to make before about Cleveland vis-a-vis Golden State.
Yeah.
Golden State scored 144 points the other night. Now, Chris Paul didn't play, but that's
matter.
A playoff team.
Exactly.
They won by 46 points
just
and scored 144.
Yeah, yeah.
How good are they?
They're very good. And you talk about a team that needs to do something. It's the Clippers need to do something. You know, because Cleveland, as bad as they're going, there's nobody in the East going to beat them. So they're going to be in the finals again. Whereas the Clippers, they're in trouble, man. I mean, they got to make a move. They got to do something because they are – you're right. Chris Paul didn't play. It wouldn't have been that bad, but he's not 46 points to the good. So they're in trouble.
It's like I remember the year that the year of the bandwagon where the Redskins opened up and they beat Detroit, I think, 49-0.
Something like that.
And people said, well, Barry Sanders didn't play. Right. And I said, well, he's not going to score 49
right,
by himself.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Chris Paul is a very important player.
He's the most important player on their team. Yes.
He lost by and by the way, and Golden State hates them personally.
And that's eight straight. And you saw, after Curry hits the half-court shot, he's running around like Batman on the floor.
You can't do that. It's a soccer move.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. All right. We will take a break. When we come back, we switch gears completely. We go to football. Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports joins us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's Read. David does not have this razor. Nigel has this razor. Michael has this razor. Gary has this. I have this.
Liz has it.
Okay, so yeah, but she's not here right
now
to talk about it. But
everybody likes it.
And Ian Kahn wants one. I think we've established that Ian Kahn wants the razor. Michael has recently shaved off his beard with the Harry's razor and now is growing the beard back again.
But I'm excited to let the Harry's razor trim the beard.
That's a turn.
He just wants to work the Harry's razor.
That's a fantastic
situation.
Like
Damon in The Martian.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, great movie.
That's a really good movie, The Martian. I really like that movie. I wasn't as thrilled with
Gravity.
I didn't like Gravity at all. But I wasn't as thrilled with Arrival as I was with The Martian. Mm-hmm. I thought The Martian was great. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers, because they don't in the copy name which razor company that is. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you will pay at a drugstore. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, to which we can attest. Weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer to fans of this show, you go to harrys.com right now, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. You enter the code TONYK at checkout to get a post-shave balm, B-A-L-M, and that is also free. Once again, that is harrys.com, and the code is TONYK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This music comes to us from Ben Bollinger and his band Six Bar Break. And he writes, this sounds like Darius Rucker, doesn't it? Laura Little, Ira Palladian, let us know that you're always looking for good original music to use on your show. Six Bar Break is a full throttle roots rock trio homed in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Right on 81 and 83, right?
That's right.
We've been spreading the word about the band throughout the Mid-Atlantic and picking up new fans everywhere we go. Feel free to check out the attached track Cocktail, or hit up our website, and we'd be happy to send over your favorite. Ben Bollinger.
Like that sound a lot.
P.S. La Cheeserie for Life. So that's very nice. That plays in, it does sound like Darius.
Yeah.
That plays in Jason Lockenfour of CBS. And before we start, so Nigel told me that you'd be willing to come all the way down from Baltimore and go through the various checkpoints and show your passport and sit in on the show. That would make me very happy if you'd want to do that, Jason. That'd make me very happy.
I would love to do it. I think all my papers are in order, Tone. I good, believe no. I will survive.
Don't go through Dulles.
Yeah, no, I'll find a roundabout. I like the back roads.
Okay.
I got a GPS in my pocket. I'm good to go, man. You anytime.
That's great. That's great to know. We would love to have you. You cannot even imagine how many people in conversation will say to me, I love when he does that thing from Dundalk. I just love that. So you have many, many fans as a result of that. Let me start. I'll get to the Super Bowl, but the headline for me is honestly John Lynch.
Yeah.
Because I hear the name John Lynch, and I say in my head the name Matt Millen. And I need to know. I mean, they are the same person, and I need to confess this. Not only do I really like Matt Millen, I would have hired him 100 times out of 100 at the beginning, and it was a disaster. So tell me what you think of this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to...
No. Tell me what you think of the hire. No.
This hire. You got it. Well, here's what they would try to convince you of, right? They would say that, okay, let's look at a wide spectrum here, and you've got Matt Millen and the disaster that was on one end. But let's look a little more recently at John Elway. Elway's a Stanford guy, and Lynch is a Stanford guy. And there's natural ties between Lynch and Kyle Shanahan because of Kyle's dad, Mike Shanahan, and John having played for him. And, you know, look how well that's worked out when you take a leader of men, a guy who played the game at the highest level, a guy who is a football sponge, you know, who can't get enough football information, and who is a very, very bright guy and someone who can command attention.
And Matt Millen wasn't all of those things?
No, he was. And you know, look, one worked and one didn't. And I would say to Jed York, well, when a 35-year-old Peyton Manning falls in your lap and when John Lynch inherits Demaryius Thomas and Von Miller and two incredible draft classes led by Brian Zanders before he took over, you know, before Elway stepped in, then I would buy your comparison. But the problem is this roster and this ownership situation and this just sort of void of leadership in San Francisco is much closer to Detroit than it is to Denver. You know, and Elway had cap guys. He had a lot of people there who could really kind of coach him up. San Francisco has been riddled by dissension and factions and, you know, the whole thing, you're basically bombing the building and starting over from, you know, secretaries and executive assistants all the way up to general manager. So I think it might be too bold by half. I think it has some real potential here not to work. And you're talking about a rookie head coach here in Kyle Shanahan.
37?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's brilliant. And he, look, you know you're getting one of the master schemers, master preparers, master play callers. But that alone doesn't build a franchise and win you football games. So I'd be incredibly interested to see the other names that are attached to this. And what role does Mike Shanahan have? Because you're going to have a hard time convincing me he doesn't at least have some sort of consulting role in this. Who else do they put around John Lynch in the front office? I have heard for weeks that Mark Domenech, the former GM of Tampa, who was there when John Lynch played there, will be a part of this, and some other guys from that organization. So we'll see, Tone. You know, it's not like Mark Domenech's tenure was an absolute home run either. Mm-hmm. So I have some reservations, without a doubt.
See, this what is so interesting to me was the story that I heard yesterday. And by the way, John Lynch is great on TV. He really is. He's great on TV. But what I heard yesterday was that the Jed York, who I think is a dope, I have to concede that. I think his hires and his fires indicate he fired the one guy who was really good. He couldn't stand him and hired a bunch of guys who he had to get rid of. Now, in terms of they had eight candidates, none of them were John Lynch. They narrowed it down to two finalists. Neither of them were John Lynch, and John Lynch pulled the old end around and called Kyle Shanahan specifically, and the next thing you know, Jed York is giving him not a two-year contract, a six-year contract. Jason, what?
Yeah, I mean, no, I would, you know, we get caught up in how many years the contract is. You know, I don't know that it's six guarantee years. You know, it could be 4 years with a two-year option or 4 years with two one-year options. But either way, it's a significant time commitment. Although, you know, Jed York, he's fired two coaches in 2 years. So, again, this is three coaches in 3 years. So we'll see how, you know, the length and breadth of this and you know, how much bandwidth these guys actually get to do their thing if the first year or two don't go well. But, you know, they had been sort of hinting all along that there's somebody else who's in this who you guys don't know about. And, I don't know. I mean, there's more people who pulled out of this thing than who stuck through till the end to be one of the quote-unquote final candidates, you know, really kind of on both sides. And the reality to this thing was when they had one sort of Uber plan, which was Josh McDaniels and Nick Caserio, two New England guys. Mm. There we go. Problem solved. They already like each other. They've already worked well together. Then we can just say, you know, look, we fixed all our woes. When Josh pulled out of this thing the day after the AFC Championship game or whatever it was, that threw this thing off the rails. And then you started hearing this guy's the leading candidate. No, this guy's the leading candidate. Yeah. Oh, that guy who pulled out, we never really liked him anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you want to see the difference between this job and other jobs, the first GM candidate or one of the first GM candidates with Nick Caserio, who San Francisco targeted, was Chris Ballard of the Kansas City Chiefs, and rightfully so. He's super qualified. You know, he quickly said, nah, I'm good. I don't even really need to talk to you guys on the phone. Like, that's not a job I'm going to move my family across the country for. But Ballard, the moment the Colts job opened up, was all over it, was one of the first guys they talked to.
So this is what I want to get to. If I look around at the league and I isolate owners that I think may not know what they're doing, Jimmy Irsay is only one step above right. Jed York.
Right.
I would ask, does Jed York know what he's doing?
I cannot vouch for much of anything that's happened in that franchise outside of the four Harbaugh years, and let's face it, those four Harbaugh years were really only two and a half. Because by midway through the third year, you knew it was falling apart. By the combine, after the third year, they're basically talking to the Browns about a trade for him. And the fourth year was a disaster in which they were already cutting each other's throats by then.
Yeah.
And you knew that they were picking Balke over Harbaugh. So, no, I have not seen a whole lot of ownership acumen out of that regime. I mean, remember what it was like before Harbaugh, where remember the Mike Singletary stuff. Like,
terrible.
That happened.
You know what coach. I mean?
All of that happened. So as to Irsay, I mean, look, he's got a dome stadium. You don't have to worry about the climate and the sleet and anything disrupting your offense. You don't have to worry about Mother Nature messing up Andrew Luck most of the time. That's still a pretty weak division. There's other talent on offense. You need to fix the defense, certainly. And I'll say this about Irsay. If anything, he kept Grigson and Pagano a year too long. And he was very loyal to Polian. And if you win games, if you show that you know what you're doing, he showed that he'll stay out of the way and enjoy the spoils of being an owner and not meddle. And in his mind, because of what he has on offense, because he has Andrew Luck, and you know, if you're fairly competent in that division, you should win 10 games a year and at least get to the playoffs.
Yes.
And you know, and if you do that, I think he'll say some kind of bizarre things on the offseason. But at the end of the day, I think I'll leave you alone.
Okay. So I'll stand corrected on that.
But I'm not putting him up there with, the Krafts and the Rooneys of the world.
I just think that the thing in San Francisco is interesting in this regard, because everything about John Lynch reminds me of Matt Millen. Mm-hmm. And all the nice things you said about Kyle Shanahan, I could tell you sounds exactly like Norv Turner. Exactly.
Right.
And Norv Turner as a head coach wasn't nearly as good as he was as a coordinator. But the different personalities, I think Kyle Shanahan is a more assertive personality than Norv Turner. So we'll see. Branching into the Super Bowl, and this is a pet peeve of mine, how could Goodell not have gone to any New England games? How could you do that? How could you go twice to Atlanta? I mean, doesn't that make you look ridiculously weak?
It's a mere oversight, Tony. Somebody messed up his calendar. He put the wrong thing in his Google Drive or whatever, and it just threw them all off. No, I mean, look, I'm sure that when he's asked again about this at his State of the League press conference,
which he
on
will
Wednesday,
be. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that he'll tap dance around it, and he'll do something down the conga line and not really address what he was asked. But clearly he was he didn't go to either games. I mean, I don't know what else to say. He stayed away. He found other games to go to. But there is no escaping it now.
He's got to be there.
This is what it is. And if these guys create history by, winning their fifth Super Bowl together, the Belichick, Kraft, Brady trio, that's going to be a lingering, resonating, historic moment in league history. And he will be there with the trophy. And I suspect it could be a little awkward. But as much as the Patriots are the ultimate elephant who never forgets, if they do win this game, there's going to be so many other emotions. And part of it is definitely going to be bleep you, Park Avenue.
Yes.
We gotcha.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's going to be the overriding sentiment. I think someone may say something a little passive aggressive that is kind of putting Raj on notice. But I don't think it's going to be something that distracts from the overall sort of celebration of Patriots glory that moment would be. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, look, normally you would think he would have been at one of the final two games in the other conference. I mean, you would think so.
Let me get to the game itself. Dan Quinn is a defensive guy. He was a defensive guy at Seattle. Seattle is one of the great defenses we've ever seen. I would think that if anybody could stop Tom Brady, this guy would have a really good chance at it.
Well, I think it's possible. I don't know about stop. I think thwart occasionally, make uncomfortable, force to move his feet. I'd aspire to that. I don't know that they're going to stop him. Vic Beasley is going to have to be one of the three or four, truly standout players in this game. For me, for Atlanta to really have a chance. If he's able, this is, a dome, a bit of a fast track. He's a speed guy. If he's able to get off on Tom Brady, especially early in the game, and Brady has to start worrying about that a little bit, and Atlanta can have a good offensive drive or two and now play with the lead, which, again, you know, you may force the Patriots to be a little less balanced than they like, then I can start to see a scenario where that defense really is a factor, because it's certainly not superb. It's more that bend, don't break type. But if they can win a few third downs, the offense is good enough to make this a game. I'm very interested to see what Josh McDaniels does to counter some of the strengths of that defense on the other side. I wonder how often they go with an unbalanced line with a big back like LeGarrette Blount, who's been kind of a passenger at times in the postseason because they're shapeshifters. They can do what they need to do any given week to exploit your weaknesses, and they don't care if that means throwing it 55 times or throwing it 5 times. So with all that said, I wonder if there is a lot of LeGarrette Blount, a heavy back running at this sort of tweener edge rusher and trying to frustrate him in the run game early. And they do go with jumbo formations sometimes. We know they can do some tricky things in the line of scrimmage with how they deploy people. And I wonder how much of that is in their arsenal to try to set a physical tone. And instead of throwing to run, maybe they run to set up some things in play action and some things in that regard down the field. You know, I think people forget sometimes that, you know, they get caught up in, you know, what they're doing with Gronk or what they're doing with Bennett or what they're doing with the, you know, the smaller receivers like Hogan and Edelman, and forget how multiple New England is in the run game as well. And this might be an occasion where they feature that.
Do you like them to win?
I like New England to win.
Yeah.
I do. Just the preponderance of experience, the fact that this isn't new to them in any regard. And then, yeah, that little extra you know, dollop of whipped cream on top of this Sunday, that is, we get a chance to, you know, yeah, flip the bird to the league office.
That's
a tough week. Yeah, both
hands and take the fine.
Maybe you get a foot involved. In that too, so.
All right. So,
yeah, that's a tough gig, I think, for you know, a relatively inexperienced at this level Atlanta team.
All right, plug your podcast for us.
Tone, I don't really know what to say, hon. I don't have any guests lined up. I'm down here in Houston. My partner Jerry just got back to Baltimore. I'm going to try to find somebody down here from Baltimore, put that microphone in their face. Maybe it's Ray Lewis or somebody like that. I don't know. Stay with us. Check out BMOshow.com. See what I come up with this week. We're on that Google thing that got us onto iTunes. And maybe I'll tag you along with Jason one of these days and find you down there in Rockville, wherever you are, hon.
So great. Thank you, Jason.
Awesome. Awesome.
Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports. This is the most fun we have all week. Mm. And he actually knows what he's talking about, as opposed to most of the rest of us. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Little James Taylor beginning here. I'm good at identifying who the beginnings are like. Very good at that. In the middle of July. This is Lance Brewer, Cincinnati, Ohio, who writes, thanks for a consistently great show. Your podcast is always the first one I listen to every day, and thanks for giving littles like me a platform to share music. I've had the chance over the years to record 7 of my songs, and I've sent along 3 in an MP3 format. I love the idea about a jukebox at the restaurant that plays the music submitted to your show, all of which has been really good. I look forward to stopping by one day, grabbing a bite to eat when I'm visiting in town. Speaking of the restaurant, Chad's here are some name suggestions. And he's got the good plate or the great plate, the inheritance. I don't mind the inheritance.
I do.
How about inheritance wasted?
The inheritance I like. Yeah. The undisclosed location, podcast, pub and grill, the pubcast grill and tavern, numbers, the socialite. I've always liked the socialite. Dads, the millennial, Millennials Tavern Pub and Grill. So these are all nice. It's very nice.
Like
very nice music.
Like the music.
Michael, considering it's your inheritance that is at stake, if people want to send in music, how would they do so?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And if they have money to spend rattling around in their pockets and they want to get themselves a gift for Valentine's Day, themselves a gift, and they wanted to buy, say, a t-shirt or a coffee mug or whatever else we're saying, selling hooded sweatshirts and stuff.
I would direct them to shop.tonykornheiser.com.
Shop.tonykornheiser.
Yeah, it's a microsite.
Fantastic. Nigel, you have news.
You know what that is, right, Tom?
I do not. I know what a microburst is, though. I know what that is. That's when the wind
over the plate.
Right.
Yeah, that shakes up everything and causes trees to fall down like
that. It's like that, only you can buy t-shirts, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Tony, yes, the Kornheiser investigative team is receiving reports of a shootout by the Biograph movie theater in Chicago. We're not sure if Ollie is involved in this.
Stillinger. Stillinger.
Well, maybe, following in the footsteps.
Woman in a red dress, right?
Did you like that movie, the Johnny Depp movie?
I liked it.
Pretty good.
It was good. It wasn't great. I wanted it to be better, but it was a very good movie.
You know what's really good and almost great?
What's that?
Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
It is.
Was that Johnny Depp? Was that a Dillinger movie?
Yeah, yes. About 5 or 6 years ago.
The original
ago.
Dillinger with Warren Oates was very
good. Yes.
Nice.
That was
this
terrific.
Is this right. is one. Marion Cotillard is in this movie. Okay.
That's right.
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. Like all of
Christian
Johnny
Bale.
Like all of Johnny Depp movies, sort of by the end, you're wondering how you got here.
Because
mm-hmm. it started out in a different direction. But Hell or High Water, totally commend it. Totally. Yes.
Big news for the Mystics. We talked about this the other day. Elena Delladone looks like she is coming to the Mystics all in exchange for the overall number 2 pick and center Stephanie Dolson and guard Kalia Copper.
Stephanie Dolson, I know, is an old UConn player, so I'm sure she's very, very good.
She's an all-star last year.
David, what did you say when we talked about the story before going on the show?
Looks like I might be going to a Mystics game this year.
Elena Delladone is the best player in women's basketball in the world. She's the best. She has a very, very interesting backstory. She was recruited. She's from the Wilmington, Delaware area. She has a younger sister, I believe, with some physical and developmental problems.
Very serious ones,
right.
Yes.
And Elena is very, very close with a sister. She was recruited because she was, at that point, one of the best 3 or 4 high school basketball players in the country. She was recruited to Connecticut, and she accepted, and she left quickly. And it wasn't that she didn't like, Gino Auriemma, and it wasn't that she didn't like the other players. Mm-hmm. She missed her sister and wanted to go home. So she enrolled in the University of Delaware, where she did not even play basketball for a year or two.
Played volleyball,
where she was probably the best volleyball player in the country.
Right.
Then she played basketball and got Delaware into the NCAAs and maybe even won a round, which is completely impossible that happened. And then she goes to Chicago. She's the best.
MVP
she's the best
in
player.
2015.
She's the best player. Mm-hmm. So if they get her, now there are a lot of people out there who listen to this show and they don't really care about Washington all that much, and God knows they don't care about the Washington Mystics. But the Washington Mystics are an original member of the WNBA, which has now been around slightly more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the Washington Mystics have never won anything. They've never gotten to the finals. I don't think they've gotten to the conference finals.
I have to correct you on that. I think they won best league attendance.
Attendance banners.
There you go. Earlier,
they put up attendance banners.
Yeah.
Proud. I mean, how much are you scraping to put up attendance banners?
Yeah.
But they've never done well. They've missed the playoffs more
often.
I think
they got to the conference finals once,
did they?
Maybe. I think maybe they've won
one playoff series.
I think
series.
They got to the conference finals once.
Well, you only have to win one playoff
That's
series.
Right.
That's,
right.
Okay.
That's right.
There's only 8 teams.
That's
I think right. 8 or 10 teams.
That's right.
She gets you there.
Yes.
She's that good.
Yes.
She's that good. I mean, I can see them getting a real spike in attendance and some interest because she's that good. Now, what is the problem? Because there's always a problem. She has Lyme disease.
She does.
And Lyme disease caused her, I think, to leave China?
Yes, well, because they didn't really know how to treat it over there.
I guess they don't have it. I guess they treat it with bobcats.
So she has Lyme disease. So shows, that causes you maybe to miss some time. But
it's Lyme treatable.
Disease, Lyme, but it's treatable. It's
Lyme
like
disease is really...
No, it's bad.
It's bad. And that's
bad.
Why they tell you, for example, those of us sitting in the studio can get Lyme disease in a very common way, which is you're wearing shorts, you're playing golf, you go to look for a ball, you go into a field of grasses or something
grass,
like that, and one of the ticks gets on you.
Yeah.
Or you're like Ollie, you're just eating a baby deer and one jumps off of the deer.
Right.
You know.
That'll happen.
Right. So, but
Nigel was correct, by the way. In 2002... The Mystics won the conference semifinals 2-0 against Charlotte before losing the conference finals to New York. It's their one playoff series win.
Ever in 20 yeah. in history. 21, 22 years.
Pro hoops in D.C. It's hot but this now. Is, yeah, hot.
Yeah, the Wizards. Title how many town. Times can I say it? I was wrong.
You were completely wrong about John Wall. completely. I was absolutely wrong about both Wall and Beal.
I'm not wrong if Beal gets hurt, but I'm because I always thought he was a good player. The other thing that I appear to be wrong about, but I cannot believe I am wrong about this, is that they have no bench and they get no scoring from their bench, and I don't know how you can consistently win games.
Well, their bench, they've actually gotten two players. Jason Smith has actually shot the ball very well. He was terrible in November. He was awful. But December and January, shooting 58% from the floor.
That's good.
That's very good. And Trey Burke has given them enough. He's not a great shooter, but he shot it well enough coming off the bench. So instead of completely losing the lead, and the other thing that Scott Brooks is doing, which is smart, is that now he's leaving at least one, sometimes two starters on the floor.
And he wanted to have the North Carolina thing under Dean Smith, bringing a whole new team.
That didn't work.
That was awful.
So after the 2-8 start, which looked like 9-20 was going to be a challenge.
One of the four best teams in the league.
25-12 since starting
20-7 since December.
It's really good. It's really good. So not only was I wrong, I take full credit for their bounce back.
Well, it's been a relatively soft schedule. They've still got March is going to be a bear for them.
Okay.
They've got Kansas. They've got Kentucky.
That's right.
It's sort of like Maryland. Maryland has the difficult end of the.
Yeah.
Maryland plays tonight, right?
Are they playing tonight?
Check
I'm
that.
Not sure.
I think Maryland plays tonight.
Is it a big one?
I think they're all fairly big. Maryland's number one in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that surprising?
And Northwestern
is Ohio State.
Northwestern is 25.
It's ranked.
At Ohio State tonight.
And Ohio State's not that good. But the top of the Big Ten, the usual three really good teams, Ohio State, Michigan State, are not.
They're all kind of mediocre this year.
Yeah, they're not good. What else?
St. Louis Cardinals got their punishment over the hacking scandal, which sent former employee Chris Correa to jail for 4 years, I believe is the sentence he got. The penalty levied on the Cardinals, the top two draft picks, which is interesting.
No, they're not their first round pick.
Their top pick, because they'd already forfeited that.
I understand, but a first round pick, if not this year, then next year or the year after, a first round pick is more significant than any other pick.
The Astros are going to get picks number 56 and 75, and the Cardinals are fined $2 million.
Okay. For those of you unfamiliar with the story, this fellow, Correa, hacked into the Houston Astros database and perused it and stole it and used all their information. This is industrial espionage. This is theft of intellectual property. $2 million, that's not even close to enough for this. Yeah. I mean, honestly, this is the baseball teams make a lot of money because their local sales are great. Their national sales, it's no longer a national sport like it used to be until the playoffs, but they do great locally. $2 million, I'm sorry. I don't think that's enough. What do you think?
46 months in the clink is a lot
for
this guy.
That's for him. But I'm talking about the penalty to the team.
And the team said we didn't know anything about it.
He was alone
on his own.
So, right. Well, okay. Listen, I mean, you're shrugging, but if you can't prove that that's not true, then there is some limit to what you would do to them. Now, $2 million is obviously a drop in the bucket.
Did they find them a closer for the Nats?
Yeah. Baseball is not basketball. Basketball, everybody who can play is well known. They play in college or they play
in
pro leagues.
Diamonds in the rough. Yeah.
Baseball is different than that. And this is when you can just steal all the homework that another team did. I don't think $2 million. Me personally. What else?
Mr. Tony, the longest running streak in history.
This is a fantastic story.
Yes. Ron Hill from my homeland, from England, ran for 52 years and 39 days
just far
straight.
Gump.
Without stopping?
Situation.
Just every day would run at least a mile. That's sort of like this competitive streak that you can do. You have to run at least a mile every day to keep the streak alive.
He ran much more than 1 mile often.
Yes, no, he competed in 115 marathons. I mean, he was a great runner. Like, broke his sternum in a car accident. The next day he was out there running.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I mean, he was just out there all the time. The streak dates back to December 21st, 1964, 5 days before the Beatles topped the charts with a little single called I Feel Fine.
These are the
before that.
Before the Beatles.
Yes.
Wow. Before the Beatles. So way before Wings.
Just didn't feel like running today?
No.
Couldn't motivate?
He suffers from an undiagnosed heart problem and said that after less
How
than
do you know if it has four, not been diagnosed?
400 meters on Saturday, my heart started to hurt. And over the last 800 meters, the problem got worse and worse. I thought I might die, but I made it to just 1 mile in 16 minutes and 34 seconds.
That's,
and he said I had to stop.
Still way faster than I could run.
Yeah, I can't run a mile.
How old, Nige?
He is 78.
So wow.
Years young.
That's awesome.
What if, that, you know, you don't want to imagine this happening, but what if after a couple of days off, he says, I've wasted my entire life. I could have had such a good time without running. Why did I do this?
Running every day.
He just said, I'm pretty tired. I think I'll go home now.
Didn't we talk about this yesterday? The guy who did seven marathons.
In seven continents in 7 days.
In 7 days.
Yes.
And that's sick. Yeah. I mean, I understand you're surrounded by like people who do this also.
Right.
That doesn't mean that objectively it's not insane.
Yeah, that's
all of this.
It's a little out there for me. I like to run, but seven continents, 7 days, seven marathons.
I like to eat. just much easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You have to fly to. That's totally crazy.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I guess private jets.
You run, fly overnight.
Yeah, you get private jets flying you all over the place.
There can't be that many people doing this.
I think it was a handful.
I think you also go east to west, so you're always catching up.
But it started in Antarctica in sub-zero temperatures.
How do you run a marathon? You're out there for hours
one
in
foot
sub-zero.
After the other.
Yeah, pick them up, put them down. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Okay. Disturbing story out of China, Mr. Tony. We all know.
China.
China. We all know how expensive it can be to get into zoos. And sometimes you just want to sneak in because you don't want to have to pay to get in.
Right, or sneak out, like Ollie.
Exactly. So a bloke who is only identified by his last name, Zhang, was in the Dongqian Lake resort, in eastern China's Zhejiang province. And he and a friend said, all right, sent the wife and kids, you guys pay for the tickets, we're going to sneak in. So they passed through a wire netting, and then Zhang climbed over a wall. And the problem was when it got over the wall.
Oops.
Lion cage?
Tiger cage.
Yeah.
Tiger said, oh, I guess lunch is early today. While authorities came and tried to scare away the tigers with firecrackers, they ended up having to shoot one of the tigers.
Oh, see, no, that's wrong.
That's,
what?
The tigers why not shoot Zhang?
Exactly. Well,
because Zhang wasn't in exactly good shape at that point. They had had their fun with him.
Oh,
as, by the way, horrified onlookers sat and did, the taping of, let's watch this. So Zhang...
Can I just make this point? It's always horrified onlookers, but they're not horrified.
No,
they're thinking, this guy's an idiot.
They're thinking, this is going to get 3 million hits on YouTube.
Exactly right.
How do you accidentally scale the tiger cage wall?
Well, the best is the friend who stayed back. He's like, you go check it out, Zhang. I'll be there in a minute. And Zhang, obviously, no longer with us. Now, another disturbing story on the line of the animal revolution. Woman golfing in a resort in southern England, a place called a pinned golf course at Gower.
Are you familiar with this?
Why are you looking at me?
Yeah, this is your country.
Your country.
I'm not allowed in these types of establishments.
Well, if it's England, there's no alligators. There's no alligators in England.
No, whilst she was enjoying her round, a cow came charging out of nowhere.
Charging?
Yes, charging.
Angry
and
cow.
Knocked her down. Yes, the woman's enjoying her golf when the cow charged her, knocked her over, left her bruised and shaken up. She was very lucky. Could have been much more
this
serious.
This sounds like an ad for Chick-fil-A.
This sounds like a Robert Allenby situation.
I'm
not buying the
angry church. Cow? I've
cow
never
just
heard
running
of
with an Amex cows. In one hand, Visa in the
That's
other.
That's a really good
charging.
Name for a restaurant. The
angry cow?
Cow.
Yeah.
That's a really good name, the angry cow.
I like that. I really like that.
Yeah.
You should get a restaurant.
Yes. But in case you think this is made up, the member of parliament, Byron Davies, said, I have been dealing with the problem of roaming cattle in Pinnard for many years.
There you go.
She's like, tell me about it. This happens all the time.
They have very angry cows over there.
It's
hard to think a cow could sneak up on you.
Well, if you're concentrating on a putt,
That's a hard one for me because. Yeah, you're on a golf course and a cow.
They can get a 360 degree view on a golf course, right?
Cows are not
like
really.
Like he's hiding behind a tree.
Cows
with his eat more chicken sign.
Yeah, cows don't strike me as stalking, predatory, nasty animals.
No.
Most times you see a cow, it's just standing there or
moo.
Laying down.
Exactly.
They don't in the rain. They don't care. They just lay down. They're
just
not.
There.
Like, nobody has ever said, let's get this cow to run the 400. You know, they don't do it.
No.
They don't do it. All right, good job out of the news.
That was
right, news. So we'll come back with Old Guy Radio, right?
That's right.
And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of the older ticket sites want to change that. SeatGeek is different. They have come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work. You save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value so that you will immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. You could get the seat that Aldridge wants for Elena Deladon, you could get that
right,
and sell it back to Aldridge and make a big profit. Best of all, my listeners to this great podcast get a $20 rebate off of their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, you download the SeatGeek app, and that is spelled SeatGeek. You then go to the settings tab and you click on add a promo code. When the promo code comes up, you enter Tony, T-O-N-Y. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you have made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. One of the first hits ever by the Beach Boys, Surfing USA. Written by Brian Wilson, probably, and Mike Love. Mike Love singing lead. 54 years ago, this was either released or reached number one.
Recorded.
Critical Commentary. They're my favorite group. You know, we all have flaws. This is mine. They're my favorite group.
Well, it's not, why is that a flaw?
I love them.
That's not a flaw.
They achieved fantastic harmony, and they achieved it naturally. They had three brothers originally and a cousin. Brian Wilson, Carl Wilson, Dennis Wilson, and Mike Love, a first cousin.
Joe Wilson? You lie!
No.
Mike Wilson?
Mike Love, who is the uncle of Kevin Love.
That's right.
And the brother of Stan Love, a former first-round draft pick by the Washington Bullets.
Played very well. And they're like, he's a good player, Stan
Love.
Yeah,
he's a good player. They also had a friend. One of their friends was David Marks. He quit, I think, to go to school or something like that. And they brought in Al Jardine. And they've been doing this in various incarnations for 50 or 60 years. And I really like them. And what I would say, and again, this applies to my life and my age. In the old days in America, and by the old days, I mean 40 and 50 and 60 years ago, not in the last 20 years, the regions in the country were actually different, not just with accents. I mean, this is before all the malls started, and all the malls feature the same goods.
Orange Julius.
So that you can dress... When you grow up, as David did in Washington or as I did in New York, you can dress now exactly the same as somebody in Washington State or Arizona, because everybody sells the same products. And there's like a national ethos in terms of how people look. And that's because of malls. That's because of the spread, not gradual, the very rapid spread of the same...
Consumer culture.
Right, the same sort of stuff. But in the 1950s and 60s, before that happened, before the internet, not only were accents different, how people looked was different, how they approached the world was different. And the Beach Boys had this look that if you were in the East, you'd never seen anything like this before, these Pendleton shirts. You'd never seen it. Surfing...
Hairstyles and stuff too, right?
Yeah, I mean, and they
stuff
were blonde.
Would take time to cross the divide.
And so you looked at it and you heard this sound, and if you grew up in the East, you went, wow, I want to see that. I want to go there.
Sure.
And I did. I mean, I got in a car.
It's like Motown
and I went there.
Different than everything else.
Completely different. Now it's pretty much all the same, and something becomes a hit. There are no such things as regional hits anymore.
Right.
So when I was growing up, somebody would, for example, I went to camp in the summer, and I had never heard of, and this is in the early 60s, I had never heard of a woman recording artist named Fontella Bass. Fontella Bass is from here. Fontella Bass had Rescue Me and a couple of other things. And my friend Kenny Marcus knew all about, because she was from here, knew all about Fontella Bass. That's impossible now. That's impossible.
Sure.
It's national immediately. Everything is national all the time because of the internet and because of the demand for everything new. But in those days, people dress differently in California than they did in New York. People mm-hmm. dress differently in Louisiana than they did in Michigan.
Right.
And you would go to these places and go, whoa, this is amazing. This is different. And there was that siren call for you wherever you lived. And the Beach Boys were part of that. And that wouldn't happen today because everybody looks the same right. and sounds the same. Anyway, I wanted to read this. This is Jen from Silver Spring. I wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed my visit to Chad's on Sunday. I went with my boyfriend, John, a fellow little, during the 5 p.m. hour, and we thoroughly enjoyed great service from Jamie. This being a classy joint, we were littles dining on our best behavior. In fact, I warned John before we got there that he wasn't allowed to pester the staff with any questions about you or the rest of the famous owners. One thing I didn't plan on was seeing you the minute we walked in the door. There you were, just past the host stand, wearing a red parka and deep in conversation with someone who appeared to be one of the restaurant's managers. We managed not to bother you and took our seats and then proceeded to devour plates of potato skins, ribs, and clam chowder, all terrific. Anyway, thanks for the years of laughter and the best of luck on your new adventure. Chad seems like a great spot. I look forward to returning on a Friday or Saturday night where I can partake in the $20 pitchers of Guinness. And it's from Jen from Silver Spring, and that's going
to
sound
like the Angry Cow.
Yeah, that's or yes, the Angry Cow or the Social Cow. So you're going to say, well, it's just more of his restaurant stuff. Well, no. What I'm getting to is that is someone who has listened to this show for a long time and has, you know, decided, well, why don't I check this thing out? Because I feel this connection with the other people that are on the show or listen to the show. This is, again, in some ways, this is like my David Aldridge moment when I see David on TV. And it doesn't matter that I'm on TV because I see David on TV. Okay, so this leads me to what happened yesterday. And this is the lecture for today. And Michael can help me out whenever I seem to pause.
So if you're transcribing, start now.
Yeah. So we had Tom Cotton on yesterday. Tom Cotton is an elected senator from the state of Arkansas. He's a young man who will probably try to run for president at some point. He has a fabulous backstory. He goes to Harvard. You know, Harvard is tough to get into from small towns all around the country. He goes to Harvard. He graduates Harvard. He goes to Harvard Law School. He graduates Harvard Law School. He volunteers for the military and ends up being an Army Ranger, and he's in combat. So raise your hand if you've done that, because nobody here has their hands up.
Well, which part?
This is any of those parts.
Okay, though. No, I'll keep my
right,
hand down then.
Right. So to me, this is very heroic.
I mean, I've done the show. I have that in common
yeah,
with him.
Yeah, you got that. So he's going to be on the show, and yes, he is. This side of the show is normally blue. It's normally blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told you 1,000 times I barely have my toes in America, which I learned after the last election. But, you know, the red side won. They won. They have the right to appoint the people that they want. They have the right to fire the people they want. They have the right to go to the policies that they want. Certainly the policies that got them elected, they have the right to try to do them, as far as I'm concerned intellectually. Tom Cotton, I want to hear from him. It's not so much that I want to hear from him completely about politics. There was not that much politics, right? It was mostly about your life mm-hmm. and how you got to this point and how you decided to run for office and what you might want to do next and so on and so forth. So in the course of the show drops. The show is made available to the public at 11 o'clock Eastern and 8 o'clock Pacific in the morning. Chris Cillizza, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Chris Cillizza,
you're correct.
During the time that the show is being taped, Chris Cillizza tweets out, and that happens contemporaneously. Mm-hmm. Your tweets go out at that
sure.
point that Tom Cotton is on the show. People go crazy negatively.
Mm-hmm.
People go nuts, and they say, I'm not going to listen to this show. I don't want this kind of show. Why is this guy? What are some of the things that they said?
I'm not going to go into some of the specifics, but it was generally a negative response without listening to the show.
You didn't even listen.
Get out of my echo chamber.
You didn't even listen. Exactly. We talk about silo mentality and echo chamber mentality mm-hmm. where all you want to do is hear exactly what reinforces what you believe in. This is not some guy off the street. This is a guy who state sent him to the United States Senate. There are 100 senators. That's all there are.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of them, and the people that sent him there have a certain system of beliefs, the majority of them, and he shares some of those beliefs, and he was completely reasonable in what he said. You may disagree, but you've got to hear somebody from another side. You've got to make sure that you know what you're talking about. This is why people study history. This is why people go to school, mm-hmm. so that you can hear responsible points of view from all sides, and you ultimately you make your own choice to say, I'm not even going to listen to the show. How dare you have him on? But how does that make you smarter?
No.
How does that make anybody smarter? This is essentially my lecture because, I mean, one of the things, I guess the thing that I like most about this show is that connection. that people seem to have. It doesn't mean that you agree with everything I say. It doesn't mean you share the same political philosophy or social philosophy that I have. You don't have to. There's no reason for that. But you're entertained by the show. You can't be entertained if you don't listen. You can't just say, well, I'm not going to listen to that, and I'm not going to listen forevermore. Because why? Mm-hmm. Because somebody went on the show who you disagree with?
Well, and to be fair, a lot of people did listen to the show and took issue with the way that you questioned the senator. And there
Which
were
was
also,
soft. I'm soft.
You were soft?
I'm soft.
What I found more interesting is just the response through email and through social media as to people trying to piece together your political agenda, which I think you've been pretty open with over the years, and looking at a shift with this last 6 month cycle, which I'm sort of struggling to see how they piece that together.
I mean, if you listen enough, I talk a lot. I think you would say that you know I land on the liberal
side
listen, of the fence
we know where
almost
you stand.
All the time.
Right, yeah. Right.
You know, certainly on it's like social issues.
But you know, we're in a culture where respecting the other side is almost inexcusable under any circumstance.
Yeah. I don't get that part.
Well, it's because everybody lives in a bubble. Everybody lives in their bubble now because of social media, because of the ability to kind of craft your own reality depending on which side of the spectrum you fall on. You can watch shows on TV or on the radio or on the internet that support and reinforce your own worldview.
How do you ever at that point learn anything new?
I don't think you do, which is part of the problem. Yeah. We all live in our bubbles, and we all get entrenched in our own political positions, and you don't listen to anybody. And that's part of the problem, is that we don't have any engagement with people with whom we disagree politically, which is wrong. It's why we have this polarization in this country. We have, I don't think it's any secret, Tory is not a liberal, she's not a blue person. I love Tory. We all love Tory. You know, so it's okay to have people that you disagree with politically. You can still have relationships with them.
It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. There are responsible points of view that don't necessarily agree with yours.
If
you know, but to say I'm not even going to listen, why? What are you afraid of?
If it makes you feel any better, most of the responses I saw on Twitter as I went through it last night seemed to be blaming me for most of it, as with most things on the show. Okay. So,
is something you want to add? Are you okay with this?
No, I think you handled that well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I would say to those who are threatening to never listen to the show again, I would just try and step back and place this in context. I know that this weekend made yesterday's show maybe particularly difficult to listen to for many, and I understand that, but I don't think we need to immediately rush to, I'm never going to listen to the show again. I don't think we need to try and...
Because you're
going
to miss Jason Lockenfora.
There you go. Oh, there you go.
I don't think we need to just label Tony as blank or try and look at some idea of his celebrity based on, you know, small little facts that we're trying to piece together.
Well, as you've said,
I'm basically just an idiot.
You try to
I'm basically an idiot looking for free food and pistachio nuts.
The show tries to be smart and funny. It's not propagating any agenda.
No.
Have never, nor will you in the future, I'm going out on a limb here, ever going to crowdsource the programming of it. So sorry about that. If you don't like who you're talking to and what you're talking about, you know, they're going to have to suck on it and like it.
Now I will get back to like what makes me happy. And what makes me happy, of course, is free stuff.
There you go.
Free stuff makes me very happy. So yesterday, I'm with my trainer, Helen. Mm-hmm. And,
Helen of Troy.
Right. And I'm trying to do this thing that's very hard to do for someone my age, which is planking. Do you know what planking is?
Oh, sure.
Planking, you put your hands.
It's a core deal.
Right.
Yeah.
So
your elbows are on the ground.
Your elbows are on the ground.
That's right.
The rest of you is up, but you can't put... Yeah.
And don't put your butt up in the air.
No, because I want to put it up in the air because it's less painful that way.
Right,
but
she's
always saying, lower that.
Exactly.
Right. So I'm trying to make 30 seconds or something like that.
Oh, come on. 30 seconds?
Well, I'm trying to make 30 seconds. I don't know.
Three sets of 10.
Anyway, and my feet keep slipping, and I have to walk my feet back up. And she says, your shoes are old. You got to get new shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Your shoes have lost their grip. And I point out, I don't usually do this.
My toes.
Right. It's an unusual position.
She said, how old are your shoes? And I said, you know, 3-4 years old. They're perfectly good. And she said, well, you need to get new shoes. And I said, well, where should I get new shoes? And she says something that I thought she said Birks.
Brooks?
Yes. But I thought she said Birks. She has an English accent, and it sounded like Birks. And I said, well, how do you spell that? B-I? And she says, no, B-R-O-O-O. And she said Brooks. And I said, well, I you know, how do I get those? And she says, well, I maybe I can get you a pair. And so I said, you can get me a pair. And I gave her my size. And then I gave her.
Send me a box of that.
What I needed. Yeah, exactly. What, of course, what I needed. I'm the last person on earth. I need white shoes. They need to be white or gray. I don't like the red shoes or the orange shoes or the deep blue shoes. I just don't like the way
the
that
gold
looks.
Gold shoes?
You like no, those? I don't like that. I like okay. I like sneakers to be white or gray and white or something like that. Sure. A light, very light
color. The Steph Curry dad shoe.
Right. Which nobody wants but me. Yeah. And I have like 50 pairs of those because they send me a duffel bag of those things. So I give her the size and all of that. And I assume what she's going to do is she's going to say, I trained this guy and you've heard of this guy and so on and so forth. Well, I got a text last night. Just send me your address.
The $89.99.
The Brooks people are going to send you a pair of shoes.
Ooh.
And I said, well, how'd you do that? That's great. How'd you do that? Well, she has a contract with Brooks.
Okay.
Well, she's a personal trainer, and she has a contract. And I'm saying this publicly because I have no intention of paying for these down the road. But I'm going to get a pair of new sneakers.
Brooks shoes are very good.
Are they?
They're very good. I've run in those for years. I love them.
I don't want to run.
Well, I mean, but you know, they're great. Great support for you.
I just want to be able to.
You get elliptical on them.
Yeah. So this is very exciting for me.
It's good
this
stuff.
Wasn't because I was famous. This was because she was famous.
She has a deal.
Helen, coming through for you.
Yeah. Do you have deals with anybody?
No.
Do you have deals with anybody?
Not really, no.
I don't even have a deal at my own restaurant. I have to pay. The other day I went there without any money and couldn't get anything to eat.
And you had to wash dishes in the back.
I couldn't even put it on a tab.
I didn't want to run a tab. I thought that Alan would get angry. I mean, I just thought Alan would see that as taking advantage, and I didn't want to do that. So, Brooke, have you heard of Brooks?
Yes. I go to Nordstrom Rack because they carry a lot of last year's shoes, and I always get...
worn shoes or new shoes?
No, this
new
is last shoes. Year's model.
Okay.
And I go, you know, probably two pair of Brooks a year.
Gary, you've heard of them?
Yeah, I've heard of Brooks. I actually own a pair of Brooks.
Good?
Yeah, I mean, it's a shoe.
are
they paying me? I'll say whatever you want.
That's a ringing endorsement.
My only deal is I come to the show and you let me eat bagels and drink water.
That's right.
It's a good deal.
And by the way, while we're talking about free stuff, we'd like to thank, I believe, Jennifer Perkins, who sent all the Speedy sauce, right? What is it, Lupo's?
Oh, Lupo's from Endicott. Yeah, yes. Fabulous Speedy sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
There was no note with it. There was just a case of the sauce. So
no, it's great. No. It's great marinade for lamb or chicken or beef or anything like that. You know, I'd love to put that on the restaurant menu, but nobody wanted to do that.
They don't want to do Speedies?
No, they don't want to do
You could
Speedies.
Do a variation of Speedies, but the traditional lamb Speedy on a piece of Italian white bread I don't think is going to fit this region.
Less Speedy. Slower.
The Speedery.
The Speedery.
The Speedery.
All right, so we'll take a break. We will come back with email and a jingle if
That's
we
right.
have any email that we can actually read today. It seems to be in the spirit of the angry cow.
I will say this. tough to get through, but we did read every single email.
Okay. I didn't. Michael did. He's in charge of strategic planning. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
On a 5 a.m. flight to Phoenix, a smell is rising. She barked to warn the captain at his door. It's soon after this part. Wilbon is heaving. From the gift the beast had left upon the floor.
It's a great tune.
Flush it. Flush it. Flush it. Flush it out in the air. Flush it. Flush it. I will kill these people.
Fantastic. It's a combination of a great tune by Sean Morrissey of Frederick, Maryland, and Wilbon's reaction. That tune, originally, that's a Jim Webb song sung by Glenn Campbell by the time I get to Phoenix. That's a great tune.
That's a beautiful song.
It's really a lovely, lovely, lovely tune.
Tough moment on the airplane, though.
Yeah. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports for coming on with us. I also want to thank our sponsors today, Harry's Razors, ZipRecruiter, and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. we do have some email today, and some of it is addressed to that Zipcar thing that I don't really understand. This is from Chase Jones.
Car to go.
Yeah, in College Park, Maryland. I haven't used either personally, but I dropped a coworker off at a Zipcar she was borrowing. Mm-hmm. So I asked her how it works. For Zipcar, you sign up and reserve a car.
That's right.
When you get to your car, you use the app to unlock the door, and the keys are inside.
That's right.
Have you done this?
My wife does it.
Okay. The policy is to leave at least one quarter tank of gas at the end of using the car. Mm-hmm. I think you may get charged a fee if the next driver reports that this wasn't followed.
Right.
But there is a credit card that belongs to Zipcar left in the visor with a mileage log, so the users refill the tank as needed.
Nice.
So yeah. Explain it.
No, it actually does work. There's cars all over the place that they leave in various spots. And
those little smart cars most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have a card. You get a Zipcar card, and it has a code on it. And you enter the code at a particular place and time, and the door unlocks, and you get
That's
in the car.
That's why it's a smart car, because it unlocks.
Right, and the keys are in the car.
Sounds like a spy. Go here.
Again, I've seen those things on the highway. They should
I was surprised. I thought, wow, this sounds kind of weird, but it worked out fine, and you just go.
It's too weird for me. It's too weird for me. It is. Brian Markowitz in a 20001, which is in town. Mm-hmm. With your discussion of smart cars yesterday, I had to share my experience with a smart car. I was home in New York last week. I met up with a buddy of mine who picked me up in his new smart car. I hadn't seen him since he bought the car, so I was asking what he thought. As we bounced along the BQE, he told me, quote, "This car is so much fun to drive. It's like playing Mario Kart in real life." Mario Kart, I guess, is a game.
It's a video game, I guess.
Yeah,
the Mario Brothers.
At which point, I probably said the exact same thing you did yesterday. This thing is a death trap.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't even imagine it. The woman to whom I one day may be related by marriage, her license plate is FE7887. How's that? It's okay.
It's
not great. FE stands for iron, right? FE is the chemical symbol for iron.
Yes.
Those cars, they just look so tiny to me.
They do. It almost looks like you could pick it up when you're done.
Can two people fit in that car? Is it just a single?
No, well, there's two seats up front.
Yeah. Well, the Zip, you're conflating the Zip cars, the little tiny cars. Or you're conflating the Zip cars, which are regular cars.
Oh, they're regular cars.
Yeah, you're not.
Oh, not the cars to go.
Yeah, not the
cars
little cars.
To go.
Yeah, not the little ones.
Those little white and blue smart cars.
Yeah, those are different cars. Those are different cars.
They
Zip
not,
car can be anything. She got a Camry or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the car to go, those little tiny ones, it looks like Ollie could eat one of those.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And by the way, Ollie could be in that car.
Exactly.
Dina in Damascus, Maryland. My teenagers were watching one of the newer Scooby-Doo episodes, What's New Scooby-Doo, that dealt with a dangerous mini golf game. My youngest started laughing out loud. She said the mini golf expert is Cougar Forrest. Cougar Forrest, get it? Tiger Woods. Even if he never wins another major, he's permanently immortalized in a kid's cartoon show. From Rick Kammer in Pensacola, Florida. The new name is obvious, The Fourth Quarter. That's not a bad name.
That's good.
You don't like it? Michael, you like it, The Fourth Quarter?
I'm not going to reveal my sentiment towards any of these to try and protect our ability to secure domain names.
It's a sports reference only indirectly. Rather, it refers to owners all being in the fourth quarter of life. Late in the fourth quarter for most, I might add.
Yeah.
Two-minute warning.
Well,
that's
again,
another great name, Two-Minute Warning.
Yes, again, after last call, it's Gaulers.
Yes.
It's right down the
right
street.
There.
Right down the street. Alex from the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. I live about 300 miles away from the city, yet I can feel the buzz emitting from Houston leading up to the Super Bowl. Hosting the game is an honor, I guess. But the real prize for a city is getting to host your lousy shows for a week. Well, usually. We know you hate to fly. Any other reason you won't be gracing South Texas this year? Only because, I mean, I like to go to L.A., and that's only halfway to L.A., and so that makes two really hard flights. But if it's way out west, it's an easier flight for me. I have nothing against Houston. Houston's fine. Tex-Mex food is very, very good. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, and I think David will concur, the two worst traffic situations in America are Houston and Atlanta.
Houston's terrible.
It's really tough. It's really tough. If you're out on bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time. God.